You're listening to the Fire Pit Podcast, Conversations Between Father and Son. My name is Ryan. I'm the
son. And I'm the dad, Wayne.
That is the Wayne-us. Today we're talking about boundaries, something I've historically been horrible at doing. At least time boundaries I've learned a lot in the last year, a couple years actually, but yeah, historically, I haven't been too great. I'm normally like a yes. I'm a pleaser. So if someone asks me like, "Hey, do you have time for this?" It's always, "Oh yeah, totally." And I paint myself into a corner. It's gotten me in trouble at work and personal life and stuff like that. It's excruciating. I had to do it the other day. Excruciatingly painful to say no. I had a manager ask me, hey, did you look at this? And I was like, oh man, here I go, I'm gonna do it. And I was like, no, I haven't, because I've been working on this other thing that you asked me to do. And he said, okay. And like, it was not a big deal. So that was kind of surprising. I always think that people are gonna, you know, get pissed when I feel like it's standing my ground, and the only thing I'm doing is like being a normal adult and telling them what the truth is. Like, I don't have time for that. I'm already working on this.
So it's kind of like what you're doing is you're really kind of thinking that when they ask you that question, that they've already gone over in their mind what they've already asked you previously, and now they're
oh yeah,
and actually what they may have totally forgotten that they'd asked you to do this other thing. And it's good for you to just bring that up.
Well, I think that's something you taught me early on was, and I did not master it for years, just not assuming what a person is thinking. And I would build all these monsters in my mind, like, for instance, this thing at work that I'm thinking, oh, man. What he's thinking is, I told you to do this other thing, you're slow and you didn't get it done. So now, just to spite you, I'm going to throw something else on top and see what you do. And that is, number one, indirectly, I discovered later in life, is very arrogant, because he's a manager over almost 100 people. He probably doesn't have time, or maybe doesn't even remember what he asked you to do previously. So, like, he's literally just asking, have you looked at this? Yes or no? And no is just as good of an answer as yes.
You know, we could actually do a whole podcast on assumptions.
That's a good one. I should write that down.
Because that's really true. I think, well, I won't go there, because, like I'm saying, that is a whole different area. Although it does affect you in this whole area of boundaries, the assumptions that you make. I had a similar thing happen to me today, where I was starting my work day and I wasn't really clear in my mind whether I should work on this new project or I should continue with one that I had been working on, which they still needed my help. And because I couldn't decide, I thought, well, I'll just call my manager and see what he said. And then turns out he shed some light on it that I wasn't aware of. And we were able to determine what I really should work on. I could have just said, you know, made my own decision, and it would have been wrong. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when we think about those assumptions, it really is good to clarify and fight that inner urge to go off with your own thinking and your own assumptions about something. Generally, when you do that, there may be a fear, underlying fear, like they'll think I'm stupid, like, you know, they'll think I don't know what I'm doing, or some fear-related thing that keeps you from asking questions or asking to have something clarified.
No, that's a good point. And I fell prey to that. But I did good today, and I said no, which I was very proud of myself. And, you know, me thinking too, like, because it includes myself and it's only really pertinent to myself to say no, realizing that, as opposed to maybe in the past when I would have thought, oh, why didn't they appreciate? That was really hard for me. It's like, well, they don't know you. So how would they know that?
Yeah.
So that's a good one. So other work boundaries, I thought of talking about time. I think that's a big one as far as how much time do you invest in your job? What's the amount of time that's appropriate to invest in your job when it comes to like getting a promotion, or what is it really worth to you in balance with family? That's been a difficult one. When I first got married, I was working as a consultant. So my hours were, I was single before this. I mean, I had gotten back together. Me and my wife had dated for years. We broke up. And so for a year, I was kind of doing my own thing. And as a single guy, I was like, well, this job is good money. The hours, who cares? I don't have anything else going on. So I would stay in the office till like 10 o'clock at night pretty regularly. And it had kind of become this habit. And when we got married, you know, she called me one night and was like, where are you? And I was like, oh, I'm at work. It's like 9:30. And for me, that was just very normal. She's like, why are you at work at 9:30? I was like, oh, I'm going to have to quit. So I got better jobs with normal hours later on. But it was a thing that I was very willing to invest in because, you know, if you have no other responsibilities and it's, you know, your time to shine and kind of go really hard and nose to the grindstone kind of stuff to get promoted or further your work experience, that makes sense to a young guy.
Well, and you were kind of different anyway. And I'm thinking of two different arenas for you. One of them was when you were homeschooled, and then when you homeschooled yourself, you didn't have those boundaries that someone would typically have as a student in a school setting where between this hour and this hour we have math, and the next hour we have history, and then school's out at 3:30, I'm on my way home, so it's over with. You didn't really have those kind of boundaries with your classes. Yes, you knew that you had a certain assignment that you really needed to get done, but you weren't confined by a set of hours that you had to get all this done in. And it was easy to get off on a tangent at times because there was nobody there saying, hey, school's out, you know. The second arena that I'm thinking about with you is your work. When you first started off in one of your jobs when you were starting your own business, and you kind of fell into a necessary trap. I call it necessary because it's the entrepreneurial thing where you start a business and you really have to be careful not to be too bound in your hours as you're starting off because you got to get this thing up and running. And so you can't think in a 9-to-5 mindset. You have to think whatever it takes within reason, the amount of hours and work I have to put in order to get this business going to where I can actually start eating again and doing things, and paying the light bill and things like that. So those, you know, the education and the work arena, you've had some experiences in which there really weren't any boundaries. And some of that was understandable for sure, you know?
Oh, and that's interesting you say that because I have, you know, vivid memories of both the work side, realizing I would be coding a feature and I would think, this needs to happen. This needs to be built in conjunction with this. And I, you know, would find myself talking to myself and be like, well, okay, you have to build it. It's like, yes, I have to build it because of a team of myself. And so, and also like paychecks, like when I got jobs after running a business, it's an amazing feat to give people paychecks every 2 weeks. Like just the huge monstrosity and the huge machine that sits behind that blew my mind when I was doing it on my own. Mm-hmm. And as a business owner, I didn't pay myself barely anything, if at all. because I'm vested. Whereas if I would hire a contractor, they need to get paid. And it's just a very different world. And like going back into the working world, people probably thought I was a nut job because I was like, wow, we get paid every 2 weeks. This is amazing. Because to them, it's like you take it for granted. And so running my business did make me very appreciative of a paycheck, just because you have to maintain a certain amount of money coming into the business to be sustainable and healthy. You have to pay out a certain money to your employees. There's a lot. When I first started my business, I had no idea what Net 45 is. And for listeners that don't know, Net 45 means that you send an invoice to a client and then they have 45 days to pay. This was foreign to me. I thought, wait, why don't you, when I go to HEB, I pay immediately. That's not how it works in business. Sometimes they'll float that invoice out 6 months because strategically they may be waiting for you to go out of business. And in my mind was like, that's horrible, but I mean, it makes sense. So getting used to that world was interesting. And then on the education side, the lack of boundaries with regard to how I learned something. I was talking to a coworker years ago, and he said, wow, you're homeschooled. That's so interesting to me because you're not confined. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, so as a homeschooled person, especially like that I taught myself through high school, and I designed some of the curriculum that I added on to the curriculum that I was already taking, is he said, you can follow a thought or an idea through learning to its logical conclusion. You're not confined by classes, semesters, timelines. And I was like, that's crazy. Because I remember when I was taking chemistry in high school, I was so fascinated by it. I wasn't very good at it, but I was so fascinated by it that I kept reading and reading and reading all the way until I ended up reading mom's organic chemistry book upstairs.
Was that under the covers with the flashlight?
Yes. And talking about like, oh, these are valence orbitals. And she's like, where did you get this? So, but that's very true. I was able to have interest and passion about learning something and take it to its logical conclusion, as opposed to in school, I think it would have been a detriment to me because it would have been, no, this subject to this subject is, this is what we cover in the semester and that's it. I mean, for the masses, of course, you can't like tailor make every course for every child. And I get that now, but I thought it was really fascinating. So in that instance, it would almost be the lack of boundaries or the lack of restrictions placed on myself with regard to learning, which was really good for me.
That's really interesting, because I've seen that fleshed out in you in the way you handle problems at work at times. If you go back to the limited version of thinking, like in the school setting where between 8 and 9 we're doing math, and when it's over with, I close the book, whatever I was doing, and I'm out of there and I'm gone. Or if I finish an assignment, that's done, that's over with, you know, and I don't have to think about it anymore. Or one of the things that I know that teachers absolutely hate, who are good teachers and love to teach, and that is the question that's raised so often is, teacher, is this going to be covered on the test? In other words, do I need to pay attention to this or not? Because if it's not going to be on the test, I'm not even going to bother. Mm-hmm. Whereas without the limitations of time, you can take something that really you have an interest in, and like you say, you can follow it to its conclusion. Now, when I've talked to you about some of your work situations where you didn't know how to answer a particular dilemma and nobody else seemed to know either, well, in a limited environment like the school with the 8 to 9 example that I'm giving, well, we just kind of throw up our hands and we just say, well, no, I can't do it. It just can't be done. I don't know how to do it. Somebody else is going to have to do it. But you are and have been in a setting so often where you couldn't do that. We need to find an answer. Well, okay, so it gets down to, okay, so how many are going to be in the room trying to figure this out after an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours? A lot of people, most really, will throw up their hands and walk out of the room and say, I can't figure this out. Somebody else have to do it. You would start off that way, having no idea what you're going to do, but you would persevere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think possibly this, what we're talking about, not setting boundaries on stuff, really kind of encourages perseverance in following that thread to a conclusion. But it does mean that you may go through a period of time where you have no clue what you're doing or where you're going, but you're just focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of bowls me over, because I wasn't raised in that kind of a thinking. I was raised in the old limitation mindset of, you know, after an hour, let's all quit and go home. And I'm just really intrigued with the way your mind works and the way you're able to just have no clue, but you persevere through that blank or darkness or whatever you want to call it till you get a breakthrough. And that, to me, as I think about it, is such an incredible testament to the way the mind works.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you stay in that fog indefinitely. Your mind is doing something. Mm-hmm. It's going through some kind of series of process of elimination or whatever it is, and you set that in motion by just choosing to think about this problem. And then eventually, how often has it happened where you just said, okay, it just came to me. I'm not exactly sure how, but the answer eventually did come. And isn't that fairly accurate as the way?
Mm-hmm. And it's more like earlier in life, I thought it was like a manifestation of intelligence. The longer I live, the more I realized like your contribution to my genetics was more on the creative side. Very intelligent, not necessarily math and science. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I would.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So I got math and science more from mom. But then what you brought to the table, which was kind of a beautiful thing, combined with that creativity, has allowed me to be able to solve a lot of those really crazy unsolvable problems that I thought was unsolvable at the time. Because it depends on, you kind of have to change the parameters of the question. And so you would think of it from, you know, this direction of solving it, and I would just hammer on it, and it was like, this isn't working. And it's only when I started to get creative with, okay, why did you do it this way? Oh, well, I read in a book that you should do it that way. They're like, what if there's another way to do it? They're like, oh, well, I guess I never considered that. Like, I was read a lot as a kid, and I read one mathematician's biography or autobiography, I don't remember which. I don't remember who the mathematician is either. But in school, he did horrible at math. And then, so he was determined that that was the one thing that he would be the best at, is the one thing that he sucked at so badly and became like a brilliant mathematician. And that really stuck with me throughout my life. Maybe it's not that you're stupid or that you don't know what you're doing. You don't know. So it's just a journey to knowing. And if you're willing to put in the effort and be okay with feeling disappointed that you don't get it immediately. And I've had people in my path say, well, it's just because you're really smart. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't venture that. I'm a horrible test taker. I didn't get into a lot of the school, or I didn't get an MIT. I didn't, like, all these things. But for me, the one thing I can do is, and I've even said this at an interview, I'll attack the problem and I just won't let go of it until I fix it, or I'll beat it to death.
I still remember. Like,
that's an interesting answer.
Yeah, I remember you worked for a company downtown.
Uh-huh.
And they had a particular guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the, I guess, the stereotype of the prima donna.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, who everybody, you know, did their little bow and worship of this guy because he was brilliant. And I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was, you know, maybe he was a genius. Mm-hmm. But he had told the group of, I guess, programmers or developers, and I can't remember what exactly the group was that you were working with, but he had told everybody that this is not possible. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And that was one of the first projects that I worked on. So I came in and I fixed it, and everybody was like, oh my God, you're a genius. And I was like, well, guys, okay, hold on. So the software framework that we're using, like we pay for it. And in paying for it, we pay for tech support. They're like, uh-huh. And I was like, so, I mean, I just called them and then I explained what we wanted to do. And if there were any like back doors that they could just like give me like little tips to be able to do it. And then they just told me. They're like, what? And I was like, yeah, you just ask. And then they just tell you. And this is after weeks of people like hacking on the library, like, this is impossible. I tried, like, we'd have solutions that were so far off the reservation, it wasn't even funny. Like at the end of the meeting, you're like, guys, this is not sustainable. Like, we can't like rewrite or try to like hack into their libraries and redo them. It's going to void our warranty or whatever with them. And so, but yeah, they, and still people thought like, wow, you're the smartest guy in the world. And I'm like, I called and I asked them, and then they told me, like, I learned that young. I think I learned it from you when you were doing computer repair, that you said, okay, 9 times out of 10, check if it's plugged in. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I was like, I kid you not, that's the truth. And 9 times out of 10, it's not plugged in, or you just need to ask. And so I did that many times after that, in realizing like a young man's game is thriving in the complexity of your engineering work. And the older I get, the more I realize there's lots of complicated things to fix and solve. So don't overcomplicate it for the sake of ego.
And yeah, See, in this case, you could have accepted the worship and not told him what you really did. But at some point in time, it's going to come back to bite you.
well, and for some people, that's not even what they heard was like, wow, but you fixed it. I'm like, did you hear what I just told you? Like, to them, it was like, no. It was like, we're paying them thousands of dollars a month. Like, they owe it to us. It's like, yeah. But yeah, that's very much, and that was only after I was older. Like, when I was younger, I would have been the one that was like, no, I'm going to figure this out. I'm the smartest in the room. And I figured, and I realized later on that that's an exhausting position to take, because mm-hmm. when you're constantly concentrated on proving that you're the smartest in the room, you're going to just be frustrated. You're not going to have fun. It's not a fun experience.
People can't relate to you. And when the day comes that you do fall, you'll find that there's no one that you can go to and tell. Mm-hmm. And get any kind of consolation from, you know, because you're the one that was supposed to be, you know, on top of the mountain there.
Yeah. And even like boundaries, I think that's even applicable to, you know, boundaries of yourself, of like how much you'll let people in, of, you know, in that same company, my boss had said, she was like, come to my office. Can you explain this to me? And every person that, when your boss says, can you explain this to me? Maybe it's just me. I won't venture out and say it's every person. I thought immediately I was in trouble. I was like, uh-oh, I did something. I screwed it up. It's going to be like, what did you do here? And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do my best. I was like, well, it works like this. And I explained it. And she like had this puzzled look on her face. And I was like, can I use the whiteboard? So I drew it all out. And I was like, that's why I did it like that. And she's like, wow, thank you so much. Now I really understand this. I had no idea what you guys were doing before. And I was like, wow. So like I could argue that that is a boundary in how much you choose to be vulnerable with people that you work with, and like showing that vulnerability in that thing that I did where I called tech support or helpline, I had guys coming up to me that I would have never in a million years thought they would ask questions, let alone ask for help. And they would be like, hey, can you look at this and see like what you think I did wrong? And I was like, well, first, let's not start off on that foot. Let's not assume you did anything wrong. But let's look at it together and like try to fix it. Be like, that's interesting. And we ended up figuring it out. But that was just so cool to like have these guys that didn't ask anybody for help. And then when they heard that I had done this miraculous thing of calling tech support, they felt comfortable to come to me and like ask. And it was just it was a cool experience when I opened up that boundary to be able to let everybody know that I didn't know what I was doing all the time. And it's a learning experience.
It's like everybody in the room has this armor on and you can't see through it. And that's by design. We don't want you to see what I want you to see. And if you see what I'm really thinking or what I don't know, I'm going to be embarrassed and probably wonder if I might get fired. And yet to make yourself vulnerable and to say, and I've heard you say this before and when you've been in meetings with various people and saying, just admitting, I have no clue what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And I need help. So anybody want? And I think if you were to read the minds of the others around the table, they're thinking, I would never admit that. That is so beyond the pale. I'm sorry. I couldn't do that.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm fine.
Oh, that's what's happening now is we're going through a new tech stack. And there's a lot of it. There's, 20 of us or something. And I know that none of us know what we're doing. And it's more like nobody wants to admit that. And it's a frustration now because I'm saying, I don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what you're doing. None of us know what we're doing. So let's come together and like share what we know and maybe feel our way through the dark. But it's just that's like an anti-pattern within engineering, at least from my experience. So that's my new goal at work is trying to show this to people of, you keep asking me and them and everybody because we don't know what we're doing. So let's try to find someone that knows it and then they can teach us and then we'll know. And then we can help the other people.
It's really like all these people have a piece of the puzzle. They don't realize it, but they have a piece. And it's not your piece. It's their piece. And when you get together and you realize that your piece snaps into their piece, you wouldn't have found that out had you not decided to, be vulnerable and say, hey, I don't know what I'm doing, but I do have this piece of information. And you share your piece of information and all of a sudden a light bulb goes on. And that's really, I think, the way it's supposed to work,
Yeah. So did you have any, that was awesome. We basically did work boundaries. I had relationship boundaries on here, but I think we'll save that for another episode. And also vulnerability is a good one to cover too. Did you have anything? I had a final thought on like work and contribution. What do you think, in your opinion, in your experience, what is the difference or what is the balance between doing really good at your job and trying really hard and then just killing yourself trying to get a promotion? Like, is there a balance or how do you think about that as far as that balance?
Well, I think you have to be honest with yourself as far as what is your motivation for, as you say, killing yourself in order to get the promotion. Sometimes we do that because there's a money thing going on and we need the money, which is, a legitimate issue. But a lot of times money translates into power to some people. There may be an ego thing going on. But when you think about, let's just kind of eliminate all the dark side of it and just say, how do you find the balance in what you legitimately should be considering as you look at your work life and your personal relationships with your wife, girlfriend, whoever, your family. I think it's not a real simple thing, because I think on a day-to-day basis, you've got things that are always changing. And so it's probably more important to have a singular focus on what's most important to you. Let's see how I can put this. You might call it a guiding principle that you allow to determine, you know, like some people, when we talk about what is ethical, what is moral. Those are guiding principles that keep you from cheating on your taxes or maybe cheating on your spouse. That's just wrong. So, I mean, those things help you to make good decisions so that you don't get off on a tangent and in a place that will compromise that relationship. As far as work is concerned, you've only got so much energy. You've got so much talent. There's always going to be somebody smarter than you. There's always going to be somebody who's got more power than you do. And that happens to be a big one out there in the work environment. Some people have an authority issue, and so they want to be the person in control. Why? Not necessarily because they want that job because of the money, but because of the power, because of their ego. And knowing yourself, you can surface some of those underlying hidden motivations and realize that you really don't want that job. You're going to be happier where you're at. You've got a good example of somebody you told me today about who's really allowed himself to rise to the level of management when he really loves the engineering, and he probably should have stayed there and sacrificed the money for it, because he's management. It's a whole different skill set, and you end up not being able to do the things that you started off and loved to do. And a lot of people have made that mistake. You know, yeah, it's more money. Okay, so do you really need the money, or is it more important that you have job satisfaction and doing the things that you love to do and doing the things that you're good at? So, you know, you're going to have to make some sacrifices. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices in time in order to accomplish something or to achieve a particular short-term goal or possibly even a long-term goal. But you want to make sure that whatever you're sacrificing on the journey, that you're going to be able to live with it at the end of the day. We're all going to have to sacrifice some time with relationships sometimes when we're working on a project that requires additional time. But that ought not to be a regular thing to the point where you're finding that relationship strained. So I don't know if that has answered what you're saying.
I like the guiding principle. I equate that to, I've had managers in the past say, like, where do you want to go next? Or how do you want to move up? And sometimes the position that I'm in, I really enjoy it. Like, I don't want to go the managerial route and do meetings all day long. I want to stay in the engineering stuff to, like, solve the hard problems. And I think sometimes that, especially in the rat race world that we live in, I have a lot of people that'll be like, yeah, but where are you going next? When's your next promotion? I'm like, yeah, but I'm cool where I'm at. I kind of like it. I don't have an issue. And this is what I was talking to my wife about the other day. Contentment is such a four-letter word for most people. When, you know, when are you going to buy the new sports car? I like the stuff I have. What's wrong with that? Like, just, you almost feel like you're doing something bad. But I like that. So that, like, the guiding principle that you can compare those things to at work. And like when I was single at the consulting firm, it was totally worth 80 hours a week because I didn't have anything else going on. It didn't matter. But then when I got married, that didn't work for myself. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, where I started to form that guiding principle. So I like that. I'll you definitely use that. Did you have anything in conclusion?
No, I think I'm all talked out.
Awesome. So this graduated to, or it evolved into work boundaries. We'll cover relationship boundaries another episode. That was great.
Okay. Right. Good talking to you, son.
All right. You too, Dad. Next week.
Peace.